With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We should mention this for people because there's probably people who are getting ready to gamble on games, have fantasy stuff they're wondering about. Lisa Ann will join us at 9:30 on the show to talk fantasy. Giants had to send a player home with a positive test, and then a bunch of contact trace players home, leaving them with just four offensive linemen who are not on the COVID list as of right now. They're set to play.
It's going to be real tough to tell the difference.
Yeah. That's a fair point. They stink.
Oh, boy. Wow, look at this. The Giants are not running the ball well, nor passing it well. Must be that they only have, let's see, oh, they're playing a wide receiver at offensive tackle. I didn't even notice.
But the upshot of all this is the second straight week that the Tampa Bay Bucks have had an opponent where the coronavirus and contact tracing have ripped through the offensive line room. They had the Raiders last week and now the Giants this week.
Yeah, I do. As I, along with many others, are clamoring to dub the Tampa Bay Buccaneers the most well-rounded team in the NFL. I got to remember this. It's almost this year in the NFL, because there are so many bad teams, and then because COVID has affected some teams selectively, it feels like a college environment where, oh, Ohio State looks so dominant. Yeah, but it's the Big Ten in 2014 or whatever. You can't tell. You don't know. So if a team plays against, there are seven teams that have one win or fewer right now this deep into the season. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You've got the Las Vegas Raiders. You've got the New York Giants being affected by COVID. I think the Bucks are really turning into a really, really good team, but I can't be quite sure.
Yeah. By the way, the Chargers also having to send a player and some contact traced players home as well. So the Chargers, they got hit with it yesterday. Seth, it does feel like we know from earlier this week, the Texans, you know, they had Max Sharping. It does feel like there are more of these little sort of one-offs popping up with teams. It hasn't impacted the schedule the last couple weeks. Teams have done a very good job of isolating and getting, you know, contact tracing and doing all those things. But you do wonder, as the season goes on, the weather gets colder. I keep harping on it, as more and more teams fall out of the playoff race and you get a careless player or two, this feels like it's going to be something that becomes a weekly thing, that we get these one or two teams and have a guy and now, okay, is this game in question? That sort of thing.
Well, this is the thing where I think With the Giants, the biggest problem here is that this is an institutional failure. They didn't do their contact trade. They didn't do their separating within the facility enough, is what it looks like. Because this is contact tracing, right? Yeah. This isn't just the guys that tested positive. This is that too many guys spent time close to each other. So most teams, for the most part, are doing a pretty good job with that. Some teams just simply aren't. So I think that the more that there was like the Titans incident happened, the NFL changed its policy to get stricter. Now the Giants do it. It really is a bad look for the head coach more than anything else. And maybe it's a little bit of a warning flare for everybody else. I'm not overly concerned about it, I guess, until at some point you get the NFL's version of what's happening with Trevor Lawrence. You know, what happens when a star quarterback or two get it? Then you're really affecting the competitive balance of these teams.
We got a text here. Were you joking when you said, did Tony La Russa manage Dusty Baker? Were you joking around?
I was half serious because I thought I had seen it somewhere.
Yeah, he managed him. Dusty spent the last 2 years of his career at age 36 and 37 in 1985 and 86 in Oakland, and Tony La Russa was his manager.
That's what I had seen, but I didn't check it out. Like, I looked at it, and I thought myself, wait, is that a joke or not? And then I got distracted by something else.
Not a joke. Seth and I talked earlier in the show about the wish list for the trade deadline. Rivers McCown, who writes about the Texans, riversmccown.com, recommend his material. Very, very good. He put a wish list out on Twitter, and the number one thing on there I completely wholeheartedly agreed with, and it was to trade Whitney Mercilus for whatever the market bears, start Jacob Martin out of the bye and see what you've got with an eye towards next year. I think for what Whitney's providing right now and for what his salary is next year, his salary is, I believe, a guaranteed $10.5 million. If you can get out from under that and just start to move forward, I think they should do that. And it's not disrespect to Whitney. I think Whitney's a great dude, but I just don't think he's living up to that contract right now. So we played audio from Whitney's position coach, Chris Rumpf, and we left ourselves after listening to that audio together, Seth, going, why are we not playing more Chris Rumpf audio on the show?
I want Chris Rumpf to remain with the new coach just because he sounds pretty entertaining. We might have to elevate him to defensive coordinator just so he has to speak every week.
For sound bites. Yeah, here's Chris Rumpf on Whitney Mercilus.
I think at the beginning, I think he had those COVID legs. And I think he was struggling a little bit, trying to get in shape the first probably two games. He wasn't the guy that I saw on film. And, at that point, I was like, whoa, what's going on? And then just talking to some people and talking to the strength staff, it was like, just give him some time. And then you can see him. He's starting to heat up a little bit here during the last few games. He's starting to make some plays and starting to look like his old self. And I think with a guy, you got to know who you are. You got to know what you have, what you possess, and what you can do. If you have a donkey, you're not going to put him in a Kentucky 500. You're going to put him in some type of power race. So you got to know who you are. And I'm not calling him a donkey or anything like that.
I don't know. It sounds like you were calling him a donkey, Coach.
It sounds like you were calling him a donkey to go race in a fictitious race, the Kentucky 500, which sounds like some blend of the Kentucky Derby and the Indianapolis 500 or any other 500-mile race.
It's actually, I looked it up, Seth, and it's a race where horses are driving Indy cars around a track.
Like the Kentucky 500, which is a four-day-long event where horses run 500 miles, or whichever one is still alive by mile 300 or 400.
Right.
That's
right.
Which donkeys actually have a pretty good shot. Donkeys much slower, but better endurance than a horse.
The donkey 500 is what that is.
I looked up Kentucky 500 just to be sure. I don't want to anger any of our car racing.
What'd you find out? Anything?
I could not find a Kentucky 500.
Okay, fair enough.
Look, I'm not criticizing Chris Rumpf. If there's anybody else in Houston that would have made that same mistake, it's Seth Payne, and we all know it. So I am not criticizing Chris Rumpf. I enjoy, game Chris Rumpf. I would have done the exact same thing.
Yes, yeah. The Kentucky 500 thing and the donkey crack made me actually forgive him for raising COVID as an excuse for Whitney Mercilus underperforming.
Well, but I do. I kind of admire the honesty. Chris Rumpf told a story there, without going into much detail. Early in the season, Chris Rumpf was watching Whitney Mercilus just like us, wondering, hey, what's going on here? And other people had to reassure. Now, by other people, I think he probably meant Bill O'Brien, because Bill O'Brien would be telling Chris Rumpf, hey, don't worry, I have identified him as dependable, tough, and smart. And when Bill O'Brien identifies anybody as dependable, tough, and smart, two things are going to happen. One, he will likely not play that well, and two, he will be overpaid. So mark my words. Just watch. Yeah. Just you wait.
Yeah, yeah. He lived up to that for sure. All right. As we roll on here on a Football Friday presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA, the four Texans who are deemed off limits, untouchable by the front office reportedly, will tell you who they are next. You guys spoke earlier this week when I put the poll up. Over the next few weeks, what are you looking for in terms of Texans coverage here? Is it football on the field? Is it the head coaching search, the GM search? We've got the head coach listener bracket up on sportsradio610.com. But the thing that was the overwhelming winner was the trade deadline coming up next Tuesday. The latest rumors that I've seen, I admittedly have not scoured the internet this morning, but we are, today's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. We're 4 days away, four full days away from the trade deadline. 3 o'clock on Tuesday is when the deadline hits. This is from Albert Breer of SI.com. He said, we told you last week that the Texans were waiting to see how the game against the Packers went to chart their path. which is interesting because 2-5 would have felt a lot different than 1-6, I suppose, I guess. But the Texans lost that game handily, and it seems they are now, Breer's words, open for business. The Texans have told other teams that four players are off limits. Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, Laremy Tunsil, and Titus Howard. They'll listen on anyone else, though they'd probably be less likely to move guys they just signed extensions with. They'll get calls on their receivers and could move Stills, Fuller, or Brandon Cooks, end quote. So Watson, Watt, Tunsil, and Titus Howard. Here is Mike Devlin, offensive line coach, on second-year right tackle Titus Howard.
Yeah, so Titus is a great example. So he had the same issues as far as the spring, but also had to deal with coming back from an injury. I do believe right now you're seeing more like the Titus of last year. I do think it took him that four games with coming off of the injury and getting all the mechanics back and the technique and the footwork. I did do think for through the first four, he has been working through that. But I think the last couple games, you're seeing more of what we saw from last year.
Seth, Titus Howard, to me, is one of the most pivotal players on this roster because we know what Watson is. We know what Tunsil is. We know what Watt is. He's a really good player who's on the back nine of his career. Titus Howard is one of the few, one of the only young players on a rookie contract that I think unequivocally we feel like, I don't want to speak for you, but I think you feel this way, feel like this is a guy the Texans want to keep around for a long, long time. They don't have many guys like that that they've drafted and that they will have developed that you want to keep around on a second deal. Titus Howard is one of those guys and plays a position where it's hard to find guys like that.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's where if it's a first-round pick who worked out, there's no reason to trade him for any other. It would be the height of arrogance to think that, oh, I'm going to trade a guy who is a late first-round pick who's on his rookie contract, and I'm going to get, what, another first-round pick that I'll take? And then no matter how good you are, there's only a 50% chance that that first-round pick is going to work out. So, no, you got this guy on his rookie contract. He's looking very promising. It looks like he'll be around for a long time. You don't trade that away unless all of a sudden somebody wanted to give you two first-round picks for him or something. Like, none of these untouchable guys are genuinely untouchable. If somebody made a ridiculously stupid offer for it, then you'd have to take it because it would be a ridiculously stupid offer. But I think that Titus Howard is that guy. As far as putting JJ's name out there, I don't know. You know, like sometimes PR matters for this. Sometimes politics matters for this. Sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, making JJ feel more comfortable or secure. I don't know what conversations they've had with JJ. But with JJ, we always know it's a little bit more than just the football. It's JJ and his meaning to the franchise, all of that. And I'm okay with it. The part that was interesting to me, Sean, was that I say that I'm acting like the Texans like had a press release with this, but assuming
that would Breer, be awesome.
Assuming Breer is accurate in this, and right. If anything, maybe this is an intentional leak.
Sure,
you know, it's the guys that you know are Bill O'Brien darlings who are conspicuously off that list that Breer has, like Nick Martin. You know, Nick, you feel like Bill O'Brien thought that Nick Martin was Dermoni Dawson or something. That my God, this guy. Boy, not only is he an okay, I guess, center, but he also steals weight room equipment. You can't ever leave this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But like Nick Martin, conspicuously off the list.
Yeah, I think. Look, a lot of guys. Whitney Mercilus is a guy that Bill O'Brien obviously had a ton of respect for. You know, Zach Cunningham, they gave an extension to. Now, Breer does say they'd be less likely to trade guys they just gave extensions to, and all three of those guys sort of fit that bill, especially Mercilus and especially Cunningham. He got his right before the season. The two names that he mentions with the Texans, because he does a whole paragraph where he lists the names that are being mentioned most prominently around the league right now. You know, Breer's pretty plugged in, I think, both on the team side and the agent side of things. And J.J. Watt would be the biggest name out of all these, but as he just said, J.J. Watt off limits, at least according to the Texans right now, according to Breer and who he's talked to. The two Texan names he does have in here, Seth, are Kenny Stills and Will Fuller. And that does pass the smell test because Cooks and Cobb are two guys who fit that. Hey, they just gave contracts to both of those guys.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Cooks had a contract they traded for. His is actually a contract that's Cooks. Very tradable.
It's a good, yeah, but it's also a good deal for Cooks, I think. You know, there's not any guaranteed money on it. And he is a guy that I feel, Like, even by conventional standards, non-Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby standards, but for a guy that's been traded as many times as he has, he does have a certain veteran leadership to him. It's just, it's strange that he keeps getting traded, but I can kind of see the appeal of him as a locker room guy. So I like having him.
I feel more strongly they should keep Cooks than that they should keep Fuller. I know Rivers McCown, whose tweet we were quoting at the beginning of last segment about the wish list, would like to see them keep Will Fuller, maybe move on from Cobb and Cooks. Cooks, as you said, his contract, very reasonable. No guaranteed money left on it. At a salary cap figure that I think is going to be significantly lower than what a healthy Will Fuller would get in a contract extension.
You know,
$12 million a year, I think.
You know where the Texans, if they wanted to be really crafty and if they had gone into this as soon as O'Brien got fired, is in terms of really getting, if you wanted to trade some people and get their max value out of it, like, I don't care how many wrong routes Kiki QT might run or whatever mental errors he might be making, feed him the damn ball. You know, because, man, when I watch Kiki QT, gosh, the kid's, he's electric. You know, there's a certain urgency to his movement that, frankly, I don't think any of the other Texans receivers have. Will Fuller is a better receiver, don't get me wrong. But the certain electricity to Kiki QT's movement, the jerkiness of it, he's got something special there. And I think other teams would look at that and maybe with some production behind it would actually, I don't know why the Texans don't like him, but if they want to not use him, you might as well trade him. But right now, I doubt he has a whole lot of value.
Yeah, well, and there's no chance for him to get on the field before the deadline now, obviously,
right,
with the Texans on a bye week. So it's, yeah, look, Seth, forget about trade value for Kiki QT. And by the way, they could trade him in the offseason if they wanted to, if he did something these last nine games. If you're looking at a guy like Kiki QT, and I'm going, okay, well, who is Kiki QT inactive at the expense of right now? It's at the expense of DeAndre Carter, who is the classic O'Brien player. Like, O'Brien loved to talk about street guys that they signed. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we've done really well are these guys we pick up in week five off of the street who fair catch punts for us. You know what I mean? Like, put somebody in there who might have the upside to do something that impacts a game. DeAndre Carter hasn't done a thing that's impacted a game at all since he's been here.
This is where I think one of O'Brien's blind spots. One of his blind spots. And this is why you have a general manager and a head coach, because everybody on earth has blind spots. There's things that we don't see and we don't even know that we don't see them. So you got to have somebody else filling in the holes for you. One of Bill O'Brien's blind spots, to an extreme degree, was something that a lot of coaches and teachers struggle with, which is that you make a judgment about a player and then it is ingrained in your brain permanently. And if it's a positive one, it's called the halo effect. If it's a negative one, I can't remember what it's called if it's a negative one, but it ends up becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy where you see what you believe about that player. And somewhere in Bill O'Brien's brain, he sees DeAndre Carter as dependable, tough, and smart, and ignores the fact that he's fumbled on like 20% of his returns.
Incredible.
In his career.
Yeah.
It's like, it's unbelievable that O'Brien would tab him as this dependable, tough, smart guy when he's the exact opposite. But in his brain, he's dependable, tough, smart. It's really, really shocking. And that's why you got to have a general manager. And same goes with Whitney Mercilus. You know, he's tabbed Whitney Mercilus as dependable, tough, and smart, which I believe Whitney Mercilus is those things when he was a younger player, when he was perhaps completely healthy. But a general manager at some point needed to say, hey, Bill, there is no reason for us to give Whitney Mercilus this new contract because nobody else in the league is going to give Whitney this contract. If you want to keep him around, fine, but we have to do it at a number that's reasonable for us. This contract doesn't make any sense. But because O'Brien, in his mind, has this idea, this fixed image of what each of these players are like, almost like that, and they'll never change, that's what he has to do. And he rewards Whitney Mercilus with a contract that was above and beyond what they had to give him.
This is where it shows you what a force of personality O'Brien was too, Seth, is that there is no way. You and I are two talk show hosts, right? You're a former player. I'm someone who's watched a lot of football. You and I and any number of other people either on the air or just that are fans of the team looked at that Whitney contract and said, what the hell are you doing? You can't tell me that people in positions, people that O'Brien has probably named by name that are part of the decision-making crew there behind it, whether it's Bazergan or Lipford or any of the Easterby, whoever else, you can't tell me that not one of those guys thought exactly what you and I were thinking about the Whitney Mercilus contract. There's no way that there's that level of groupthink in that building to where they observed and saw the same thing. And yet there's, I don't know if there was anybody who tried to talk O'Brien out of it. And maybe I wasn't in any of those meetings, so maybe I shouldn't just assume that there was somebody who said, but Bill, what are you doing, man? Like, what are you doing? If there were, they got steamrolled. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is where it gets interesting because, look, I know that the Texans have used analytics with all of these decisions. Like, they have a philosophy and a theory over the value of a draft pick and all of that. I just get the sense that O'Brien probably had the information. He understood what the stats were telling him about all of these things, but when push came to shove, he was always willing to spend a little bit more. He was always willing to, like, get it now. He was an impulse spender on a lot of these things, or an impulse decision maker, even though he knew what that's like any of us. Again, checks and balances. Like any of us, like my wife and I have checks and balances when it comes to our spending. There are certain things that I can't be trusted with when it comes to the finances because I'm going to make an impulsive purchase or a lazy purchase, even though I know it's wrong. That's why, and I have my wife to talk me out of that. O'Brien had nobody talking him out of some of these things.
Yeah, see, this is where Amy's listening right now. She's like, for now I know how Bazergan feels. Getting steamrolled. I'm the O'Brien of my household. I'm like, babe, we are buying those three TVs and we're hanging them on the wall this week. I know it makes no sense, but we are doing that. All right, if you're looking for something to do tomorrow afternoon, go to a college football game. It's U of H against Central Florida. Cougs 2-0 in the conference. They're trying to keep that undefeated streak in conference going. Kickoff at 1 o'clock, TDECU Stadium. 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, $100. Can't
go
beat
out
that.
And just, yeah, experience life, my friend.
Yes.
What's the forecast for tomorrow?
Is it beautiful is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It says beautiful.
Get out there and feel like a human being again. You're watching college football on a Saturday. You're getting free hot. Well, yeah, it's not free technically. I like to think of it as free.
Yeah.
But you're getting hot dogs and soda at a really good deal.
Tomorrow, 75 and sunny, baby. 75. It's 48 degrees outside right now. Wow. Fall is here. It's nice. So get on out there. TDECU Stadium tomorrow. UHCougars.com/tickets. UHCougars.com/tickets. Limited capacity. They're doing all the social distancing and protocols. So UHCougars.com/tickets. Up next, there is a QB in the NFL who is giving his fan base Brock Osweiler flashbacks. Almost word for word. It's amazing. We will have it for you next. The bye week is a good time. When your team is 1-6, the bye week is a good time to take a look around the league and just see if there are any other fan bases whose seasons have unfolded more miserably than yours, or maybe whose future looks less promising. And I think the Texans, ultimately, if they hire the right head coach and general manager, they're going to be fine. They've got the quarterback. It's going to take a little elbow grease to fix that roster, but things will be looking up soon enough. The Minnesota Vikings, I don't know if we can say the same thing, and I know the Vikings, Seth, beat the Texans earlier this year at NRG Stadium, but damn, man, Kirk Cousins is your quarterback, and if I were a Viking fan, I'm not sure. Well, actually, I don't want to say I'm not sure. I know how I would feel about that. I think Kirk Cousins is a big fugazi quarterback. He's a quarterback who plays his best at noon on Sundays, and that's it. When the lights are on the brightest, he's terrible, and he has been an interception machine this year. He's thrown 10 picks this year in 6 starts. I'll give you one guess as to which team did not intercept Kirk Cousins when he played them. But Kirk Cousins was asked about the interceptions in his press conference this week. And when he had an answer about it, it sounded eerily similar. It gave me flashbacks, a Pavlovian turning of my stomach. Here is Kirk Cousins on interceptions.
Yeah, you know, every interception is a little different. So you go back and look at each one and say, you know, why was that the case on this one? And certainly the first one against Atlanta, I would say, you know, I got too locked in on Justin and didn't need to force it. But, you know, I wouldn't say many of the others were predetermining. And a lot of them, you shrug your shoulders too, and you say Hail Marys are unfortunate, tip passes are unfortunate, you know, and so you have to kind of look at each one as its own entity. And some of them, there's not a lot you control, and some of them you can control entirely. And you just study each one very critically and take what you can from from each of them as individual plays.
Okay, that sounds very familiar. A little mansplaining of interceptions going on, kind of categorizing them and tiptoeing around certain things. Sounds very, very familiar.
Do you feel there's been a consistent theme with the interceptions that you've thrown this year?
No, I don't. I think every interception really has a different story. The first one today, I came off a play action fake, had to scramble, got outside the pocket. I saw Hopkins. I knew it was man-to-man coverage. Didn't see the defender trailing behind him, and I thought we were going to have a big play along the sideline. And the defensive back made a tremendous play, intercepting that ball. The second interception today, like I said, I read the coverage right. It was the exact play that we wanted versus that coverage. I just threw an inaccurate pass. I threw the ball too high to CJ, but when you go back and you watch the tape, you'll see there's a big window there if I put it on CJ. And then obviously the third interception's a Hail Mary situation. But I think every interception has a different story to it. Unfortunately, it's happening too often. But that's something that, I'll study very hard tonight. I'll study very hard tomorrow as well. And, I'll continue to move forward and try to improve.
Why, Brock? Why?
I miss him so much. Just to be clear, Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, every interception is a little different. So you go back and look at each one and say, why was that the case on this one?
Brock Osweiler.
I think every interception really has a different story.
It's you know what some of that speaks to, and I think you would say that about both these guys. And I don't want to be unfair to Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins has been a relatively successful quarterback in the NFL.
Years ahead of Osweiler. Yes,
Brock has about a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio for his career, whereas Kirk Cousins has been much more than that. But I do think with both those guys, there is almost this feeling you get where, man. Okay, I appreciate that you're taking a systematic approach to this, but could you please just stop and be a football player at times? Could you not try to be a professor of football? Could you just go out and sometimes the simplest thing to do is the best thing to do? Because I think really what those guys would both say is, okay, as they're dissecting these various interceptions and trying to figure out how each one is a snowflake unto itself, Brock just categorized the three main categories of interceptions. One, bad decision. Two, physical error, bad pass. Or three, it's a Hail Mary and whatever. It's going to happen on a Hail Mary, what have you. The bad decisions and the physical errors are the ones that you can pin directly on the quarterback. And I think with Brock, you made a lot of bad decisions, and you're a big, tall, loping 6'7" freak of a human being that couldn't actually physically make these good passes under pressure because you're too damn long limbed, and it's frustrating as all get out after a while when you have to watch it for almost an entire season, except the period when you were benched, and yet somehow this think piece from Sports Illustrated this spring made it look like that you had a successful season the year you went to the playoffs.
Yeah, this. I'm glad you brought this up. So I was
Bleacher Report.
I was using the Google machine yesterday to go find that old Brock audio because I'm hearing that Cousins thing, and you were the one who pointed out the Cousins audio, Seth. You're like, boy, he sounds a lot like Brock. And so I was going to find the Brock audio, and as I was Googling to try to find it, this article pops up, this long-form article by Greg Bishop pops up about Brock Osweiler from January 29th of this year. And at that point, Brock Osweiler had quote-unquote retired. As it turned out, the phone just stopped ringing, and he decided to announce his retirement.
I'm in the wrong business.
He makes very clear in this article that if somebody called, he would unretire in a second. But he's officially retired.
Yeah, Brock. But he also, I think sometimes you're officially retired where they paint him as the victim. Like, oh, nobody wants him. If you make it known that you only want to be a starter, then people aren't going to call.
Right.
I'm sure there's teams out there that would love to have you if you would be cool or at least understand, okay, I'm going to be a backup until I get an opportunity to start.
Yeah, so Greg Bishop flew to Scottsdale, where Brock is living now, to basically go hang out with Brock for a few days. And most of it was spent on the golf course or playing with his 2-year-old daughter.
Where there's a surprising number of Houstonians talking trash to Brock.
Which I don't buy for one second.
In Scottsdale. I know some of these. It's like every time Brock ran into somebody, it was somebody from Houston who was telling him how they're disappointed in him. It was a really weird part of this story.
I believe almost none of the stuff that paints Brock as either A, a victim, or B, a studious NFL player. Oh, like, where it no, painted Brock Sean, like he was, studied more than any other NFL player in the history of the game.
He was second in the building in Denver, don't you know, after, I don't know, it was like some of the, like, one of the grounds crew staff or something. And then, after he would go home and have dinner at 6 p.m. every night, he would go back to his office and study
Why?
Even more.
Why?
So basically, Brock was working like 16-hour days as a backup quarterback in Denver.
There are some interesting things, right, as a backup. There are some interesting things in the article that about his relationship with Gary Kubiak. And we know that Brock, when he was there in Denver with Kubiak, he was the backup to Peyton Manning the year that they won the Super Bowl. And Peyton was statistically a terrible quarterback that year. They had an otherworldly defense. That's why they won the Super Bowl. At one point during the year, they benched Peyton Manning to put in Brock Osweiler. And when they did that, Seth, I'm very curious on this one. There is a story in here, a little small anecdote in here about Osweiler being ready to finally take over for Peyton Manning in game. Peyton had thrown four picks in a game, and Gary Kubiak walks over to Brock and says, "Your turn, time to go in." And the article says Osweiler was ready. He knew the stakes, especially after a Broncos assistant had told him, quote, "When Peyton is done playing, my job security is in your hands." These assistants with Gary Kubiak, these leeches, these parasites that have followed Kubiak around everywhere he's gone, which of the Kubiak crew do you think walked up to Osweiler and said, when Peyton is done playing, my job security is in your hands?
Wait, did he say that in this story? Did they claim that that assistant said it before he went on the field?
It just said he knew the stakes, especially after a Broncos assistant had told him, quote, "When Peyton is done playing, my job security is in your hands." It doesn't specify.
The way I read that was that, like, somebody had said that at some point.
I think that the assistant whispered it to him as he was going on the field right there.
The two guys that I think would have made the most sense are two guys that Texans fans will remember and recognize. Rick Dennison, who was the offensive coordinator at the time. And then the quarterback/passing game coordinator, Greg Knapp. Mm. I would think it would probably be Greg Knapp, right? Because you're the coordinator. Rick Dennison's been around, and who knows, like, I don't know, maybe he gets another head coaching job. So I'm guessing Greg Knapp felt like, all right, I got to be sure that I do my best with Brock Osweiler. I'll tell you what was kind of depressing in this story, Sean, was how they painted up that season that he spent with Denver starting half the games like it was like this genuinely really impressive season or something, where he wasn't just kind of holding on to the wheel as the driver, you know, checked his email. It really wasn't all that impressive. It was like the writer, Greg Bishop, brings this up a couple times. He passed for 61% that season. Like, yeah, it's like 2016. If you're not passing for more than 60%, you're on the unemployment line.
It's
what the hell are you talking
below
about?
The league average is my guess, 61%.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, right now it's almost like 70% is the new 55% in the NFL. If you're not scraping 70% completion rate, you're probably not doing all that great a job.
All right, so this is my favorite part of the story, because we remember that story in Tennessee in week 17 of the year that Brock was here in Houston. And by then, Tom Savage was the starter. It was the last week of the regular season. Tom Savage is the starter against Tennessee. Savage gets concussed in the second quarter, late in the second quarter of that game, and is taken out of the game, pitches a hissy fit about it. And O'Brien goes to Brock and says, "Brock, you're in." Savage is concussed. And Brock pulls the old, "Oh, now you need me, huh?" And then there's a story from Brock's perspective about O'Brien and Brock getting somewhat heated with each other, to the point where Brock felt like he was, quote, being held hostage in O'Brien's office, and it was a very heated conversation between the two. So people remember that story, right? Let's juxtapose that story to this one of Brock after he was removed as the starter in week 17 of his Bronco career in 2015. This is the story. Still, Brock remains forever grateful to Kubiak. The coach called Brock Osweiler into his office and hugged him for 10 seconds that night, then said, quote, "I love you like a son, and I'm so proud of you." Osweiler broke down, sobbing in Kubiak's arms. Kubiak tried to comfort him, noting that he had spent most of his career backing up Elway. Then he pointed to his fridge, said, quote, "That's filled with beers. Have as many as you want." Osweiler pounded, quote, several in a row. He can't recall how many. Shower changed and then did his press conference. This story is the biggest pile of bull crap of all time.
There's no way. Okay, wait a second. Wait a second. I got to lay this out for you. Kubiak hugged Brock for 10 seconds. Odd that, but I feel like Brock is the kind of guy that would have done a one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. In that 10 seconds, Brock starts to sob. Kubiak, apparently, I'm envisioning him like stroking Brock's lustrous hair on the back.
Instead, while standing on a small stepladder.
Points over to a refrigerator and says, "That's full of beer. Have at it." Kubiak leaves, and then Brock starts shotgunning beers or something.
Several.
What the hell's going on here?
And then did a press conference.
And he said, "I don't remember how many because, look, I don't count beers the way I count seconds of a hug." There's an oddly weird places to add detail and then to subtract them. I can't even remember how many beers I had before I went and gave this press conference.
Kubiak climbed up on a small stack of phone books, hugged Brock while he was sobbing.
There you go, Sugar. Everything's going to be all right.
Oh, my God. This story.
You're like a son to me, but not one that I would claim publicly. Don't ever tell a Bleacher Reporter writer that I said that.
I retroactively believe nothing about that O'Brien confrontation now either, because that all came from Brock's perspective. The whole thing about how he felt like he was being held hostage.
This is the one in the story, Sean. You have to remember the phenomenal stretch that Osweiler had in that season, where despite the injury, he completed 61.8% of his passes and threw 10 touchdowns compared with 6 interceptions.
That's right.
You know, those are really good numbers by 1979 standards, Sean.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I forgot he lit the world on fire in Denver that year. My bad.
The biggest thing that was revealed in this story that really angers me, and I would call this organization out, except I might want them to represent me someday, Creative Artists Agency, CAA. They're one of the biggest. Apparently, the first offer that, according to Brock, the Broncos had offered him 3 years, $39 million, and Brock was super excited about it and wanted to accept it on the spot. "That's embarrassing," one agent told him. "We're not even going to respond." So CAA basically screwed the Texans for a damn year.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden in come the Texans, who by the way, blew him away. Let's see. The Texans offered the princely sum with $37 million guaranteed. This is a quote. "Then Houston went there," in italics.
Yeah.
"That was more than anyone expected, even Osweiler, so he did what any reasonable human being would do. He took the money, forever attaching the contract to his name."
Oh, God. The article is from 9 months ago. It's still a well worthwhile read. If you're cool with, like, now, you know, if you're past the Brock Osweiler thing, now we've got Deshaun Watson, we can all laugh about the Brock thing now, kind of, I guess. It's hard to laugh when your team's 1-6. Seth, I don't know how we missed that in late January, that article. It is amazing.
Well, the Texans were in the middle of a playoff run, and Bill O'Brien was trying to assault a fan from 10 feet beneath
them. Oh, that's
right. Honestly, that right there was probably the best indicator that O'Brien lacked strategery, as we call it, in thinking, dude, you had the extreme low position there. Wait until later and go up and take the high ground. Surprise attack him from one of the entryways, you know, and then rain down blows on him from above.
That's right. You suck too! We put up a poll yesterday. I put up a poll at Seth recommending that I do it. Seth talked me into doing this. I put up a poll on Twitter just to troll fans of teams in California, and oh my God, did it work. You will want to hear the replies to this thing next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.